Now, back to the gardening show with Dean Krauskopf.
1-800-859-0957 if you'd like to join our conversation. And we do have a conversation going on. I've got some lines open. So if you have that question that's really been annoying or you just got to have an answer, call me. 1-800-859-0957. Or if you're in the middle of the week where I'm not on, you can email me. And the email is, of course, the email URL is thegardeningshow.com. Down at the bottom of that page, you'll find all kinds of things in it, but you'll find a form. And Bruce, in South Lyon, Robert in Dearborn Heights, Jim in Clay Township, and Greg in Tecumseh. I'll get to your emails today, but I'd like to talk to you. 1-800-859-0957. If you take a look at thegardeningshow.com, there's lots of information on that page, as well as the form to email me. And we'll be putting up information about Japanese beetles. We've got some information last week on Japanese beetles. Early things on early and late blight on potatoes and tomatoes. Unfortunately, both are going on. Some good news for those of you who, of course, are here in Michigan, especially to the west side of the state. The blueberries are coming in. My favorite time of year. Also, lots of other things going on. Vegetables. I was walking around a farmer's market this afternoon on my way into work, and unbelievable. Green beans, new potatoes, squash, you name it, it's there. And it's what I say. What better place to live in Michigan in the summertime? Wintertime, we may need to think about that part, but the summertime you can't beat. 1-800-859-0957. What else have I got on? Oh, podcasts. If you miss the show, and that happens, what did he say? Check the gardeningshow.com website out, of course, and then you'll have the podcast. Nicole, our webmaster, does a beautiful job, makes it very easy to navigate. And you've got all the podcasts from all season. So you can really check back on what I said. And, or, you know, if you missed the site time, hopefully you'll take a look at it. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Bob in Garden City. Bob, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Thank you, Dean. Quite a few years ago, I bought a pair of gloves that were by the manufacturer's name Garden Handy.
Yeah.
And I have been unable to find them, even on the Internet. They allowed me to pull thistles up without... barberry without them breaking through the gloves.
Wow.
Do you know of anything like that that's still available?
You know, I will put that out. No, I don't, but there are some newer ones out there. Actually, I found these at a big box store, and they've got a... I have arthritis, and they fit tightly, so, you know, that helps if you have arthritic hands. And the other thing is they've got a rubberized... kind of soft palm, and it's kind of got bumpy, so you can really grip without, you know, so that, and again, with arthritis, I need some padding in there. I don't know who makes those, but were these leather gloves?
No,
canvas?
They were canvas, and they were dipped in a material that you would think it was vinyl,
but
we took out a lot of barberry bushes and never had... they were never pierced by those thorns.
Huh. That's a name that doesn't ring any bells, but I'll tell you what I'll do, Bob. I'll put it on the webpage, and, of course, we'll talk about it today. So if anybody happens to know a source of Garden Handy garden gloves, give me a call or check thegardeningshow.com after Wednesday, and I'll put the information there and ask people if they know where they can get them. They'll email me, and I'll put it up on the web.
That would be great. I've had so many thistle bushes come up this year in my yard.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's been a year for that. I like leather, personally. That's what I use. But there are lots of other types out there. But we're looking for Garden Handy.
Right.
Okay.
Let's put it out. Thank you very much. Let's see what we can do.
Thank you for calling.
Okay.
1-800-859-0957. Sometimes we don't give out information. We give out hints on gloves or anything else. Let's go to Vicki in Lapeer. Vicki, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about my turnips.
Okay.
I pulled them up today, and I believe I have cabbage maggots. They're just little tiny white worms that are burrowing, making tunnels into things.
Could be a couple other ones, too. Do they have a black head or not?
No.
Okay. It's possible. There's a whole range of insects that get turnips and that whole group of plants. The problem is, once they're burrowing, it's a little bit hard to control. However, I would use Carbaryl, which is Sevin, S-E-V-I-N. It's under several different brand names. The dust works the best.
Okay.
And that
will you do, dust the leaves? Dust the
leaves and around the ground underneath. Underneath the leaves. Now, as I said, if the eggs are already there, that won't get down into the turnip itself and kill it, all those. It'll just prevent more infestation. So you're going to have to deal with, you know, the amount of damage you got now. The only way we could control the ones that are in the turnips, Vicky, to be honest with you, is to use what's called a systemic insecticide, which would move inside the turnip, and then you'd eat it. And see, that's where the problem is. Of course, we don't want to go with that route. If you don't want to
What can you do to prevent it to begin with?
Two things. Three, actually. One is to cover them with the Rimé fabric or that non-woven white, really light fabric stuff. People who don't like to use pesticide find diatomaceous earth, if you're familiar with that product, which is ground up. Well, they're not ground up, but they're little shells. Or the other one would be the Sevin dust, just after the plants pop up.
Okay, and as far as the fabric goes, just cover it as soon as you plant?
Well, within 3 or 4 weeks after they pop up. Stay on the line, Vicky. We'll be right back with the Gardening Show.
Now, back to the Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
1-800-859-0957. And we're talking to Vicky and Lapeer. Vicky, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
The problem we've got is that these, whatever you do, either covering them, using the diatomaceous earth, or using Sevin or Carbaryl, the dust, is that it's got to be very early because the female of the maggot, which is a fly, obviously, is attracted to the small plants or the soil around them. So you got to go in early. Are you going to plant another planting, which you've got plenty of time?
That's what I wanted to do because these just didn't turn out all that well, and I've got plenty of time.
You know, that's the thing. A lot of us just forget that for many of the crops like beets, turnips, peas, things like that, the fall crop is actually the best a lot of times. So I would go right in. You know, if you don't want to mess around with the turnip, you can't salvage any of the ones that you got, take them out. Get the soil all turned over and replant right in the same spot.
I have some rutabagas planted too. Are they gonna?
They'll hit those too.
90-day crops.
Yeah.
Get them.
And the maggot group, all of them tend to hit all the crops like turnips, root crops type of thing.
Okay.
The good thing about rutabagas is that unless they get big enough, at least when I have infestations, you know, I can salvage. You know, the rutabaga is big enough that you just take out, they damage the outside surface, and then you can salvage what's left. So you still get a crop out of them. But yeah, they're annoying, very. But
so from now, I have some of the Rimé cloth. I've got that over top of my cabbages.
Yeah, that works real well.
So I can do that with my second crop of turnips real nicely, and then maybe put a little bit. Diatomaceous earth in there with it,
That would work.
Be sure.
That would work. Just give them enough time to get, you know, the Rimé is very, very light. But if you put it in before they're, 2 inches, and they start to harden off and stiffen up a little bit, it'll flatten them. So you got to give them a little growing room before you put the Rimé in, or put hoops over it, some way that you can keep
it.
The hoops would work great unless that works really good. You know, Rimé was a very useful tool.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
My pleasure. 1-800-859-0957 or thegardeningshow.com. Down at the bottom of the page, of course, you can email me, and I will be glad to answer you on the air. I can't do it directly. Just got too much of a volume there usually. So check it out, and we'll go from there. Bruce in South Lyon and Robert in Dearborn emailed me this week. A couple of interesting questions. Bruce in South Lyon has a 30-foot Crimson King maple. And these are interesting because the top, from the middle of the tree to the top, there's nothing but lacy outlines of what the leaves used to be. And this, I think, Bruce, with the from the description of the damage, you'll find it's Japanese beetle. And they have a very unique way of feeding, and that's the typical from the top to the middle is very on a lot of trees that identifies a Japanese beetle. And I will put on the gardeningshow.com website this week, again, wait till about Wednesday, and from the University of Kentucky, a great article about which plants are susceptible or attractive to Japanese beetle and which ones aren't. Your question is, do I need professional help? It depends. There is a material out there called thifluorothrin, and if you check that website out, you'll find the link to that. It's listed in the article that I'm going to put up on the web. It's available to homeowners, and you could put it on with a hose and sprayer, depending on how tall the trees are. 30-footer, 15 feet, yeah, you could do it if you want to do it. It'll last about a week, and then you go back in and do it again. You do need to probably protect the leaves that are there. It's a little early for defoliation. I'm not terribly worried about the tree unless there's some other kind of, it's, you know, been attacked over the years or had a lot of winter damage. Losing those leaves this time of year is relatively innocuous. However, it would be better, if you don't mind doing it yourself, to use this material, or you could call in a pro. The problem with the professionals at this time of year is they may not be able to work you in. They are working like mad right now because we have Japanese beetle outbreaks. We're still cleaning up a lot of the damage from windstorms and what have you out there, and certainly still working on the tree damage, especially from last year's winter. So may not be able to work you in. But, Bruce, it's very possible that you can control this yourself. Take a look at the gardeningshow.com website this week after, usually Wednesday, after Wednesday. It's updated, and I will put that information on there. However, if you don't want to wait that long and you've got a question you'd like me to answer, give me a call, 1-800-859-0957. Got lines open. Let me give you that number again, 1-800-859-0957. Also, Robert from Dearborn Heights is going to replace his whole backyard. That's very cool. Putting in new topsoil and grass seed. What can he do right now? Well, right now, there's a couple things I would suggest. Actually, I'd be thinking about what I need to do and what I need to get. One of which is that, first of all, if you're going to put in that much topsoil, make sure your contractor's using screened topsoil. It's got to be in the contract. You need to sign something or something, and they've got to guarantee that it's screened. Robert, there's no legal definition of topsoil. So that gets a little iffy, but they have to be able to screen it. The reason for that is that it gets rid of roots such as thistles and those kind of things, and that really will make your life a whole lot easier if those don't come through. So talk to your supplier. Make sure they're using screened topsoil. Check the website is turf.msu.edu. And I'll put that one on my website too, thegardeningshow.com. And check out that you got the right grass seed, or at least which type do you want to use. Do you want to use a bluegrass type of grass, or the ones that we're suggesting now for many people is the turf type tall fescues. Totally different grass and much tougher, has some quirks of its own. The one thing that you do need to think about is that if you're doing it or you're having a contractor come in, once that topsoil's put out, you need to till it in. Especially if the topsoil, if it's going into heavy clay, you don't want to have a layer of topsoil over a layer of clay. What happens then is grass is just trying to grow in the topsoil, and as soon as it hits the clay, it's like growing on concrete. The roots will not penetrate, and that's going to cost you over the years. So this is a not cheap thing that you're doing, Robert. So make sure they're going to till it, and when they till it, they're not talking about you know, a little hand tiller that somebody walks behind. This is a tiller that's got to go down 8 inches or more, which means they got to bring a tractor in and do it that way. So talk to them about that and things. And then 1st of August, go in with glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup, and kill everything off. Water it, make sure it's, you know, and try to sprout any weeds that are coming back. 2 weeks after the first application, go in and kill it off again, because there will be some sprout back, I'll guarantee you. And that should make it ready to go for the contractor or you when you come in and do it. So, you know, easy to do. If you do these kind of things beforehand and prep it, you don't have to worry about so much later on. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Larry in Southfield. And Leroy, you're up next. So, Larry, welcome to The Gardening Show.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. Appreciate it. My wife and I were just discussing the Japanese beetle, and I wanted to call you on that, and I turned the radio on, and lo and behold, you were already talking about it. My question is this, sir. What is the best antidote, or I don't want to say the cheapest necessarily, but the best, most effective antidote for these little things?
It depends on where they are, Larry. Are you talking about grub attack in your grass and turf, or are you talking about the adult beetles eating your shrubs, plants, and things like that?
Things like that, the latter. Right now they're attracted to the white daisies,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, roses.
In our little flower garden. But yeah. I've already put up a couple of bags, you know, those beetle bags.
All right. The first thing I would do, Larry, is get rid of the bag. And stay with me, because I've got to go to break here in a second.
Not a problem.
We're going to talk about why you don't want to do that.
So, okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Gardening Show will be right back.
Now, back to The Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
1-800-859-0957. We're talking to Larry in Southfield about Japanese beetles. And Larry, you said you bought the traps. That's not a good idea. And the reason for that is that they are very, very good. I mean, they attract beetles from literally a half mile away. Unfortunately, not all of them stay in the trap. So first thing I do is get rid of the traps. Okay?
Okay.
Now, here there are other ways to kill these guys. Actually, they're fairly easy to kill, but it takes repeat sprays because the materials, if you want to use a spray, none of them will give you a tremendous amount of control because they just keep flying in to the trap. So the material that is the most effective, actually, is this thiofluralin, thurlthin. And if you look at my website, thegardeningshow.com, about Wednesday, I'll have a link up that lists all plants attracted to Japanese beetles and ones that aren't, and it'll also talk about controls, and it'll have that in there. The other one that is useful is carbaryl, which is 7, S-E-V-I-N.
Okay.
Now, that has a longer residual, about a week or so. However, now, and I need to warn everybody that's listening out there, these materials work very, very well in Japanese beetle. Unfortunately, they are very toxic to bees.
Okay.
So
there's a lot of bees in amongst the daisies.
There's where I'm thinking you've got to make a decision. If you decide to apply these materials, make sure as much as you can that you don't touch the flowers at all or any opening buds. All right.
Okay.
Just the foliage. And spray very early in the morning or very late at night when the bees aren't active. Are these the daisies and stuff established? Have they been around a while, or are these new plants?
No, they've been around a while. They're very aggressive almost.
Yeah, well, they're a weed, if you're, most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, my thought would be, are there any other plants in that immediate area that the beetles are attacking? May not be flowering.
Yeah, I think it's the hostas.
Those, if they don't have flowers on them, go ahead and spray those. You know, we don't worry about bees. They're not going to be attracted to them. or things like bittersweet, winter creeper, those kind of things, any of the grape family. They
okay, anything that's not in flowering.
Right.
Flowering
but again,
stage.
Be careful even early morning, late evening. You never know where a bee is going to hang out.
Okay, so when you spray that, let's say early in the morning, the residual will...
It'll give you about 5-7 days on the thifluralin, maybe a week to 10 days on 7.
Okay.
Now, so that's not 100%. You know, you'll see a beetle here or there, but it'll knock the population down.
Okay,
now,
because I have them hanging about 30, 40 feet from the flowers and the tree, the small trees that they're affecting.
Still, I'd get rid of them.
Okay.
Yeah, they are drawing beetles from a tremendous area. So
okay.
I know that they're not cheap, but they just work way too well. They are very effective at drawing beetles in. Unfortunately, not all of them get trapped, and there's where the problem is.
Okay.
Now,
yeah, they're having, it's like they're hovering around the bushes and the trees that the traps are in. It's almost like a Japanese beetle Woodstock festival for crying
out loud. Well, yeah, and you can, I'll tell you, you're going to have a grub infestation right under those spots if your lawn's anywhere close to it, too. That's where they're going to lay their eggs.
Okay.
So traps are a great idea in somebody else's yard, not yours.
Okay.
The other thing is, if those daisies are, you know, really established, and you don't, you know, I don't know, how big a plot do you have to deal with?
Oh, it's about 10 by, about 8 by 20,
you know
it's L-shaped.
What
garden.
I would do, I would let the, because of the bee issue, I would just let the beetles hit those daisies. I would hand pick the beetles, just pick them off, drop them into some soapy water once or twice a day, if you don't mind doing it.
No, that's how I started to do it.
Sure.
You know?
It will, you're going to get a fair amount of damage. I'm just worried because the bees, at least in mine, are really active right now. I mean, they're just going
around. Oh, yes, they are. They're very active.
And I would hate to see, our populations are so low. All of us, I think, have a stake in that. And I'd rather sacrifice a few daisies or something like that than take the risk. But that's just my personal opinion.
Okay. For anybody that's a little squeamish touching them and so forth, I just have some vinyl gloves that...
Yeah. Or the other thing is that they've got it's a predator avoidance reflex, that if you put the container underneath the leaf and then just run your hand over the top, they drop right into it.
They have a
drop.
They're very easy. You're right.
They are. And soapy water works just fine. You know, you don't have to do anything with them in that way. But I think, again, this bee issue is getting to be critical. And I think all of us, as I said, have a stake in maintaining the population as best we can.
Well, it's getting to the point now to where one or two find their way inside the house. And that's...
Those are just, they're going to do that.
Yeah.
My wife freaks. I know she hates them. So I chase them around. And I guess that's the only approach that I take. In the house, they're not going to do any damage except to my wife's psyche. So I'm not worried about that. They're not, you know.
Okay.
I just chase them down and she points them out.
Okay,
and
great.
It's kind of interesting to watch is what I've been told. But anyway. Okay?
Okay. Well, thank you so
Check
much.
Check the website, thegardeningshow.com, after Wednesday or so. Okay?
Okay, great.
Thank you, Larry. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Leroy in Ohio. Leroy, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you taking my call. I've got a little farm and about 2.5 acres. I'm wanting to plant a little orchard tree on there.
Sure.
And my question, when I dig the hole, do I need to put like a PVC pipe at an angle where they go towards the roots to be able to water it, or I'm wanting them to be able to grow, you know, pretty good. Do I fertilize?
You don't need to fertilize them the first year. Is there a source of water nearby, Leroy, or not?
Well, there's a little creek that's close to it.
Right.
We've got a well, but it's on the other end of the farm. But I can bring water out there too.
How many trees are you thinking about putting in?
Whatever I can fill up on that 2.5 acres.
All right.
It's a creek that cuts off the section of the farm.
Right.
So I was gonna make a orchard there and put a bridge over the creek there to be able to get to them.
Nice. That sounds really quite nice. I would do it this way. How big of trees are you going to get? Have you had any thought about that?
Well, one gentleman told me to get the dwarf trees instead of getting regular ones.
No, dwarf would be, if you're going to harvest the fruit, definitely. If you're going to use it for, a lot of people up here plant deer for deer, you know, if you're hunting.
Yeah.
And then they go with the full size. But no, dwarf would be the way to go. What I would do is check around. There's various names, but you probably have seen these. Usually they're green plastic bags that you'll see along streets or someplace where they put in new trees. And what they do is you fill them full of water, and then they slowly release that water over a period, I think it's up to 5 days to a week. And they're not exactly cheap, but certainly they would give you, you know, if you got to pump water out of the creek and things like that, you would only have to take care of it like once a week or so, rather than have to do it more frequently.
Yeah.
And they really do work. I think, you know, they do work. Like I said, that's an investment, but it reduces the amount of work that you have to do and certainly ups the chance that those trees are going to take.
Okay. Another question. You said not to fertilize the first year.
No.
If I put in the PVC pipe, do I put fertilizer in the pipe where it goes straight to the root or around it?
Larry, can you still hold? Leroy, can you still hold on? We've got to go to. Well, no, I got another minute. I can't read here.
Sure.
The first year that you've got, the trees really don't need any fertilization at all because the root system's got to establish itself and get out so it can take the nutrients up. So the second season, or in the fall of the first year after the leaves drop off, is the time to fertilize them. The second thing is the most important things that you can do to make sure these trees take is keep them well watered, and you can do that through the plastic type pipe if you got the pumps and all that, or with the bags, and make sure you keep the weeds down, weeds and grass away from them. And those are the two most important things that you can do.
Well, keep the grass and weeds away from the trees.
Right. And keep them watered.
Okay. And I was thinking about planting them in the fall because I heard that fall would be better. I mean, any time of year.
Leroy, hold on a second, if you don't mind. I'm going to put you on hold again, and I apologize. But, again, background music means I've got to take a quick break. So, Leroy, we'll get back to you. But if you've got an interest or a question, 1-800-859-0957.
Now, back to the Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
Before we go back to Leroy, we're going to be talking. I'd like to thank the people behind the glass in our control booth, and that's, of course, Rich Lucinski, who is our engineer today, and the pleasant voice talking to you on the phones, of course, is Crystal Price. Thank you both. 1-800-859-0957. But we're talking to Leroy about his fruit trees. You were commenting about when to plant. If you could find a source of trees, Leroy, the fall would work, but typically the commercial tree producers, they dig their plants in the fall and then store them over winter, and then they're available in the spring. So most people will plant in the spring.
Okay.
One of the things that you can do that will make your life a whole lot easier, though, is to dig the holes in the fall. Get them ready to go. So in the spring, it saves an awful lot of time. It'll improve the soil structure, and you can get rid of some weeds that way too. So if you got the time in the fall, you can lay it all out, dig the holes, and then in the spring when you get your plants in, then you can check, you know, it really speeds things up.
Okay. All right. That answers a lot of headaches.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful project and I really kind of am envious you of that stream, and then you're going to put the bridge and the trees. That's going to be fantastic. So good luck.
Well,
with it, sir.
It's for the grandkids.
Oh, yeah.
We do have bugs and stuff, and I will be planting the apple trees, and that's going to be like candy for them. But I live in Alabama, and I've always heard of the apple trees do not do good in Alabama.
They make talk when you get back home. Call the local Alabama Extension. Service and get the list of trees that do varieties that do well in the temperatures. That's the problem, that you don't have a cold enough winter. So there are some varieties that do okay in Alabama, as far as I know, but you need to check with the local experts down there.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, good luck. That sounds like a great project.
Bye.
Okay, let's go back to the lines and let's go to Terry in Toledo, and then Jim in Livonia. Stay on the line. You're up next. So, Terry, welcome.
Good afternoon.
What's going on, man?
Well, I'm on Maumee Bay right here on the Ottawa River, and about 2 years ago, I bought a peach tree.
Cool.
From one of our local gas station dealers, whatever they are. I dug a hole, great big hole for it, put it in, put a lot of new dirt in it, a lot of good drainage, been watering it, fertilized it. And right now, it's doubled in size. It's big, it's green, but there's no peaches. When do I get peaches?
Do you remember what the variety was, by any chance?
I don't know. What's the variety on that thing, Diane? She's looking right now. The variety on it? Majestic.
Okay. Does it say anything about being a grafted plant?
No. No, okay. Nothing at all about grafting now, that I know of.
If it's a peach, you think about 4 to 6 years, the rough.
4 to 6 years?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well, hey, man, look, it's worth the wait, isn't it? If you get a fresh peach in your backyard, I'll wait 4 years for that. Now, an old-fashioned one could be up to 6. If they're a dwarf or a grafted one, it'll be closer to 4.
Oh, I think I'm going to have to buy a can of peaches before that.
Hey, just go down to your local farmer's market, and if it's anything like they are here in the Metro Detroit area, the Georgia peaches are available, and they're not bad. They're not bad.
Yeah, I know. We got a big farmer's market here in Toledo downtown, and I do hang around there occasionally. I thought this thing would pop out after a year or so, but
no. The rule of
six. Wow.
The rule of thumb, just Terry, for the other people that are listening out there, all the tree fruit. Definitely, you figure after 4 years, you should start to get some fruit, not many, first year or two after that, 4 and 5, and then they come into full production. If you're getting ones that are what they call an ungrafted, some of the older cultivars, it can be up to 6 to 8 years before they get big enough and mature enough. The other thing is, cut out the fertilizer. If they grow too well, too much fertilizer, too much nitrogen, it slows the formation of the flowers. You may actually put back a year or more. So stop being so nice to it. Cut out the fertilizer.
Well, I may get scurvy by the time this happens, but we'll have to wait and see.
Well, there's good health facilities in Toledo, too. So,
if not, you got Detroit Hospital there. Okay.
You got it. They are good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Let's go to Jim in Livonia. So, Jim, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Hi, Dean. Just got a question. I don't know if you recognize the terminology, quack grass.
Yep, sure.
But,
unfortunately.
Used to have the best lawn in the neighborhood, but over the last few years, infiltrated with this stuff and checked around, and there doesn't seem to be any solution to eliminating this.
Nope.
Other than digging up the whole lawn and resodding. But I'm just trying to see if there's anything as an alternative. But so far, I haven't had any luck.
Okay, first of all, let's make sure, and I'm sure you've checked it out, but just other people are out there that are looking for the same kind of information. On the last show or the show before that, I listed a website from North Carolina State University that keys out. In other words, you just follow it through to make sure you know which grass that you're dealing with, weed grasses. And you might want to take a look at that. Quack grass is one of those that basically once your regular lawn starts to get a little old, or maybe it doesn't, is not as thick as you would like, it tends to move in. And that's really what the issue is here. Is it in big clumps, or is it in one spot? Tell me a little bit about that, Jim.
Well, it's right into the front area, which is really a decent lawn, but you got an area kind of in the middle, maybe 10 feet long and 6 feet wide where the Ouch. Sprouts are coming up. And, of course, you know, when the grass is growing, you could see it distinctly outdoing the regular grass. You know, it's the higher one. And
Is it doing it right now?
Oh, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it tends to be really bad in the spring, but then it kind of tones down through the summer.
Is it quack or is it crabgrass?
No, it's quack.
Okay.
Not crabgrass. No
crabgrass we could do something with.
Yeah, I know.
How old is your lawn, roughly? Do you have any idea, Jim?
It's quite a few years old. We moved in here in 89, so the house was built maybe 10 years before that, and, you know, they put the original sod in the bluegrass all around the place.
The way I look at it, you got 20 or more years out of it, and that's not a bad investment. The problem that you've got is that if you just kill out that area and reseed it or resod it, you probably won't be able to match the color. The new cultivars
right.
of variety are much darker.
That's right.
Yeah, and
yeah, I've cut out a little area and bought some sod and you know the color's different. I dug it out and then you know put some Roundup in there, waited for a few weeks, then put the sod down, and the sod is growing fine. You can see the color difference. So. Eventually, I guess that color may fade into the other. Or look a little better anyway.
There might be. You can fertilize the other more, but basically it's the new genetics, to be honest with you. And that means that it's always going to be darker. You're always going to be able to see it. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Jim, if you're sitting at that famous spot that between the rock and a hard spot. The only real thing that you can do on this is to go in and clean it and redo it. And if you look at my website, or it's turf.msu.edu, and get into there and talk about lawn renovation. However, the good part of it is that if you do it right, you follow the directions, you don't cut any corners, you've got another 20 years. You won't have to do it again. Okay, background.
Yeah.
Okay. Stay on the line, Jim. We'll talk off the air. Background music means that I'm going to have to leave. Check thegardeningshow.com for all the information that I'm putting up there after Wednesday. Or if you have a question during the week, check that out. But at the bottom of the page, we've got the website, and you can email me, and I'll try to get back to you on the air. But, you know, have a fantastic week.